Years ago, it was around the time that we had started Friendster, so many, many years ago, I got a phone call from someone from within our community that wanted to meet with me, and I could tell he was really serious on the phone. He needed to tell me about something in his life, and I didn't know where he was necessarily going with it, but I could tell over the phone that it was something pretty serious. It was so serious. I said, hey, why don't we meet for coffee at Starbucks somewhere up in here? He says, no, I'd prefer somewhere private, like really private. And I was like, oh, okay. So when we got together, we met in my office. He wanted to talk about everything but the thing. I could tell. I was like, I was pretty sure we were here to talk about something, and we can talk about the weather and flames, and we can go through all this, but is there something? And so I think I finally said, hey, what's going on? He said, I have a dark side, Jeff. And I was, I'm still trying to remember back to exactly how that whole thing went, but I'm sure I was saying, hey, like, don't we all kind of, hey, you know. I was trying to lighten it up, and he's like, no, I've got something really serious going on in my life. And I, in my head, all of a sudden, I'm thinking, oh my gosh, did he kill someone? Or, and I didn't know what he was about to confess, but I was thinking, do I tell him, look, if you confess to a crime, I've got to report it. Like, I might not be your guy. Like, I was just like, oh, I all of a sudden got stiff. And so as we began to chat, he said, I haven't been able to tell anyone what I'm about to tell you. I've prayed to God that somehow he would forgive me, that he'd help me overcome my problem. And I'm like, his voice began to quiver and he got all emotional. He said, I struggle with masturbation. I went, oh. I didn't come out and say that, but I have to admit, I kind of. You said, that's it? Okay. So I was like, okay. He's like, I haven't been able to tell anyone. I said, okay. You're pretty eaten up about this. He says, I know it's wrong. I know God hates me for it. He started just opening it. He says, I believe it's gonna ruin my chances of a healthy marriage one day. He was a young adult guy, unmarried. He had been reading a book that it encouraged getting him an accountability partner. So the long and short of it was, he said, I was hoping you could be my accountability partner. Now, I'm going to talk about some stuff this morning, and I don't know where everyone sits on some of this stuff. So I need you to hear me out right to the end, all right? But I'll be honest with you. I was just like, how does that work? Like, before we could even get to trying to ask these kind of questions or answer them, I just kind of said, buddy, I'll call him Steve. Steve, I think you're going a little hard on yourself. Now, I don't know who's been talking to you and all that has been said about this. I don't know what book you're reading. I don't know anything, but I got to tell you something. What you're struggling with is probably something that everyone has struggled with. And I was just trying to go, like, I mean, if he's, metaphorically, he had this hammer and he was just batting himself on the head as he was talking about his weakness here. I'm just like going, there's something broken about this, pal. You got to go easy on yourself right now. Stop. And the more I talked, the more he became suspicious of me. He's looking at me and going, are you trying to tell me that this conviction that I'm feeling about this, everything is like unjustified? That I should just be able to, would I was like, kind of. I don't think that what you're doing right now and how this is reflecting on your life and how you're looking at yourself is healthy. And the more I talked, the more he was like, you know what? I think I'm done here. He looked at me like I was some tool of the devil that was trying to chip away at his conscience and make him maybe think less about his problem. That was one of the last times I saw that guy. Now, I'm going to be honest with you. I grew up in church circles, traditional church circles, where I wasn't like, it was totally foreign to me what he was thinking and believing. In my church circles, they didn't talk about sex. They didn't talk, really, unless there was like a big problem or something in the news that they wanted to just come down on. I remember one time, it's funny, I remember sitting in a service and a church leader got up and for whatever reason, I mean, I didn't hear a thing he said all that Sunday service, but he stood up and he started really decrying the evils of this sitcom that was out there. It was called Three's Company. And he just said, this thing is, how many remember that? Oh yeah, okay, so for you younger ones, that's too bad you missed out on something. But so it was sitcom, funny, three people living together. That was Chrissy, Janet, and Jack. Jack had to pretend he was gay to make it all work, as dare he forbid he lived together in the same apartment with two girls. And Chrissy, the blonde, was this real sexy thing that most of us guys were all in love with. And so up until that point, I hadn't really thought about it, but this guy got up that church service and he said, we gotta shut down these shows and don't let your family get caught watching this stuff. And I was like, I was looking around wondering, is mom paying attention? It's one of my favorites. After that, every time she would come into the room, click, change the channel. Other than that, the church didn't really talk much about, but it really, the sense you got was, man, sex, just one of those bad things. And masturbation, oh man. Like, that was just, no way. So as Steve was talking to me that day, I was now married. I'm looking at him going, oh God, this is not right. Something's so broken. How many have ever just kind of been involved in kind of just even just watching or listening or even personally just felt this kind of thing that I'm talking about? It's like, it's an area where people are just living in these secret stuff and no one seems to be able to talk about it. Christianity has a sordid history for perpetuating this problem. The sheer volume of negative messaging that has been directly and indirectly communicated by church leaders over thousands of years is actually quite disturbing. In hindsight, I believe most of that messaging was really designed to help people guard their spiritual lives. I want to believe that that was their intent behind it all. But instead, much of the messaging that was propagated within, especially, hey, I'll speak about Christian churches because that's what I know. Much of it created nightmares for so many. So much confusion, so much guilt and shame, secrecy around such a large and important part of our lives. Hear me? Such a large and important part of our lives. What's sad is that some of the toxic beliefs that were taught even hundreds of years ago still have their tentacles affecting many today. I mean, let me just add, you don't have to show your hands. It's like, well, I'm not. How many, just as I say the word masturbation, what the? Or the idea that we're going to do a sex series in church. Going, what is that doing there? How many ever feel anxiety when becoming or being sexual with someone? Feel any level of anxiety? Do you ever feel yourself trying to limit your sexual expression, worried about what you're wearing, what kind of vibe you're going to give off, what people are going to pick up off of you if I wear this piece of clothing or that one? You feel discomfort with any form of nudity. Vince was telling me he was in Europe recently, out on a nude beach, and he was like, wah! He was like, it's just a different thing, he said, Jeff. Like, do you feel discomfort talking openly about your sexual body parts? Do you have to give them different names rather than a penis or a vagina or a clitoris or a that was my tradition that I grew up with. Have you ever even indirectly communicated that sex or being sexual was kind of dirty in any way? And especially us parents in the room. Kid rips off his pants and he's running around the street and you're like, get in here, you don't do that. 3 years old. Okay, maybe 16. Come as no surprise that much of the problematic response to sexuality has been perpetuated by the church. No surprise. I don't think Christianity is the only religion that has perpetuated some problems, but I know Christianity has. Looking back, I mean, I'm convinced one of the healthy steps, the steps we can take to a healthier spirituality is looking back. Where did it all come from? Why? Like, why has this been such a dirty little secret in the church? Why does it seem so much of that area has been roped off, saying, man, what happens in bedroom, we don't talk about? Why is that? Maybe some of you know this history. Some of you have never been a part of the church, and so you're coming in, you're going, yeah, what is your deal, you Christians? Today, I want to pull back the sheets. See what I did there? I want to talk about this. You know what? Maybe my need to laugh is just my own way of kind of dealing with my own anxiety around this. And I realize I've got issues. So even as I'm going to talk about some of this stuff, I'm kind of, it's a therapeutic for me. There's something broken about how we've talked about this stuff. That's the whole point of this whole series. Know thyself. Breaking through this stuff and going, look it, there's got to be a better way. To be clear, I'm not here to beat up on the church, but in order to know where we're going, we need to know where we've been. All you have to do is read up on some of the early church fathers and their views of sexuality to know, wow, we got off to a bad start in Christianity. The early church fathers were responsible for shaping most of our theology, our beliefs, right in the first to about the fourth, fifth, sixth century. Early church fathers, they were known by at least their first name. These guys were the heavyweights. When they said, look, I think this is how God works, the Christian communities adopted it wholeheartedly. Let me just tell you what some of these church fathers, early church fathers, had to say about sex, can I? I'll begin with Tertullian. He was in the second century. We'll just kind of roll this out on a timeline. Tertullian claimed that he would prefer the extinction of humankind over the evils of sexual intercourse. Origen, this was Tertullian's counterpart. He was so convinced of the evils of sexual intercourse that he took a knife and he castrated himself. Jerome, he's in the 5th century. When he had a sexual desire or thought, he adopted a practice of throwing himself onto a thorn bush to overwhelm himself with pain. This was his this was a psychological technique we haven't adopted recently, but this was his way to trick his brain into thinking, don't be doing. Don't be associating that with pleasure or whatever. Just don't be doing that. Martin Luther. This is a guy who led the Protestant Reformation. The hero that is held up in so many Christian churches today. He said, intercourse is never without sin. Mark Twain. So this guy isn't one of the church fathers. He came along later in the 1800s. He was just watching. Like, kind of just observing the bizarre anti-eroticism of the early Christian church. This is what he had to say. He said, it's like man has imagined heaven and has left the entirety, this is what he says, the entirety of its supremest of all of his delights, left out one of the supremest desires, one of its, okay, let me just quote it. The one ecstasy that stands first and foremost in the heart of every individual of his race. He's left out, he's imagined heaven, he's left out of heaven, one of the supremest delights, that being sexual intercourse. It is as if a lost and perishing person in a roasting desert should be told by a rescuer he can have all that he's ever longed for, but one thing. You don't get water. He says, that's what it's like. You've been out in the desert, you get roasting desert, you get rescue, you can say, hey, anything you want, you get it. Just not water. He said, that's exactly what it seems like Christians have done with heaven. They've created this beautiful place, but oh yeah, there's no sex up there. Why were they so against sex? Why was this such a deeply dark thing? What's mind-blowing to me is that it wasn't, the more digging I went into, it wasn't from passage of the Bible that these Christian fathers developed these strong negative beliefs toward. Rather, it was the philosophies that were very popular in the culture of their day. Now, this is really important to know. There were these very in that Greco-Roman world, ancient, there were these gurus that were walking around sharing their philosophies of life. Plato. Familiar with Plato? Stoic philosophy. The Gnosticism was really big. Let me just tell you about some of these. They call it the dualistic cosmology of Plato. And I didn't want to get into too much of it, but really the nuts and bolts of it, and Vince is going to go into this in much more detail next week, but they believe that the soul and the mind are at war with the body. This was the dualism of Plato. This took a big hold. They believed that everything in life was either could fall into the spiritual category, that which was of the spirit, or into the secular, the profane. And unless it was of God, of the spirit, of something up there, the profane was the evil, was dark, and they were at war with each other. Stoic philosophy believed that nothing should be done for the sake of pleasure. Nothing. The Persians, actually, who really perpetuated Gnosticism, they believed that demons had created the world. And sex in your body in which your soul is trapped, and the key to salvation is to free the spirit from the bondage of the body by denying the flesh. This would have been like the stuff that Tony Robbins would have been promoting here, today, and now. And people were buying into it. They believed the early church fathers had so embraced this popular philosophy at that time that what they did is they, using that philosophy, they then turned and started interpreting the Bible through that lens. And so when you take this stuff, without wanting to bore you to tears, with taking this stuff and then you turn and you start looking at the Bible, you can see how even the story of Adam and Eve, Eve being this woman, ooh, there's nakedness in the garden, gah, that can't be good. And then she is the one that says, Adam, let's take the fruit. What do you say? If you follow their teaching, I didn't want to get into it because it's repulsive. The anti-woman stance of these early church fathers, they believe women are temptresses. They're the source of all evil. They look at Eve as being really where all the damage got done. She lured man, helpless man, can't help himself. And all of a sudden they start building this theology of evil, sinful flesh. Any desire that you have, no way. No way. These early church fathers that shaped much of Christianity in the first 400 to 500, they wanted nothing to do with sex and sexuality. I mean, if you even see some of their unpacking of the concept of the Virgin Mary, through this lens, they look at it and they go, see? God was not supportive of sex. The Savior and King, Jesus, was not the product of something evil. He came through a virgin. Like, you can just see how every piece of the Bible they took and they twisted it. And they said, see? Now, if you fast forward another 400 years from Martin Luther, like, I found as I was reading through it, I found it, number one, appalling, number one, boring. Let's get into the fun stuff. If you fast forward 400 years from Martin Luther, we enter the Victorian era. Now, it's not that this is any more exciting. This is, too, is appalling. But it's starting to get closer to home. And in fact, for any of us that studied history, we learned how the Victorian era influenced the Puritans who came over and settled in North America and really had a large stamp on our culture today. But during the Victorian era, this was a time of harsh restraints on sexuality of all people, especially women. The cult of true womanhood dictated that submissiveness, purity, and piety were the traits of a true woman. The only women deemed worthy of marriage were those who abstained from sexual activity. So focus on the women. Us women were not allowed to talk about sex, much less want to have sex. These were social taboos. This was heavy. Of course, sexual repression abounded. Young women were kept in their homes while being closely watched by their mothers. You can go into some of these Victorian era museums and see the chastity belts that they wore, these steel contraptions. I mean, everything was designed to say, no, no, nothing. You can't. They believed that an unclean or impure woman, someone who had been defiled, had sex, would never be capable of finding a husband. I mean, even marital sex in this time of history was seen as a shameful necessity to married life. Apart from conceiving, husbands and their wives end up sleeping in separate bedrooms to prevent the temptation of getting physically intimate. Though there was pressure on men to control themselves and their natural instincts, it's quite appalling when I was reading this. It's almost like society kind of concluded, you know what, they can't help themselves. So while all this repression is going on, they estimated, it was a medical journal, Lancet Medical Journal in 1887 estimated that there were approximately 80,000 prostitutes in a city of 2.4 million. 3% of the population were prostitutes. 3% of the population were prostitutes. So while they had all this repression going on, the men are... It's just bizarre, this insanity that was happening back then. Contraception was another taboo subject, being regarded as anti-religious. You couldn't talk about contraception, because why would you be doing that? You only had sex if you're going to produce a child. So abstinence was the only method to prevent and regulate childbirth. Now let's fast forward again on that note, which brings us to the purity movement of the 1990s. I was a youth pastor. There was this big event going on that was sweeping North America for sure. It's called True Love Waits. Did anyone ever hear of True Love Waits? Yeah, a few. Yeah. It was really formed by the Southern Baptists. Boy, you know, those Baptists Can't even dance. You know where that leads. This Christian group promoting sexual abstinence outside of marriage for teenagers and college students, this thing took off. I remember being a youth pastor, and I mean, I was inundated with the material of this program. There were big bands, big Christian bands that were touring high schools, church youth groups all across North America, promoting a pledge that they were encouraging young people to take. The pledge was that this, believing that true love waits, I make a commitment to God, myself, my family, my friends, my future mate, and my future children to be sexually abstinent from this day until the day I enter a biblical marriage relationship. They figure in that decade of the 90s, 2.4 million Americans signed pledge cards saying, we will wait until we are married. Now, not only did they pledge to abstain from sex, they were pledging to abstain from sexual thoughts, from sexual touching, from pornography, from any actions that could lead to sexual arousal. They're saying, no, we're signing off from it. Now, obviously, the message, because it went so mainstream, the message on the surface was, look it, this is your best protection from STDs and from unwanted pregnancy. But really, the message, and I know as a youth pastor, I saw it coming through loud and clear, was this. They're remaining sexually abstinent until marriage was a good moral and especially the spiritual choice. In hindsight now, it's obvious that what was indirectly being taught was that our sexual urges are kind of immoral. They're not spiritual. They're not healthy. That we are better people when we choose to live with above them. There was all kind of vagueness in the program. People were signing these cards and then they'd start dating and whatever, these kids. And it's like, well, maybe if we're just allowed to do this. They didn't mention that. As a youth pastor, every now and then, kid would open up and go, like, what's the deal? My girlfriend is saying, this isn't allowed. Is that true? She signed some card. I don't know what the card is. What is it? The vagueness and the broadness of the sexual constrictions left people confused and often feeling they had to reject even just normal, healthy sexual urges. By 2004, the movement had petered out, leaving a wake of carnage behind it. The stuff that happened for young people when they blew it. They'd signed the card, and then they slipped. They did something. So now they had to become a liar. Not just to their parents, not to just their friends. We saw it with Britney Spears. She was one that signed the card. And then later, when asked, she was put on the spot. Initially, she lied. She'd become a model American kid, taking the pledge. I think JT signed one of those cards too, actually. Forced people to lie, forced people to hide their sexual lives. Now, I'm no expert on human sexuality. Like I said earlier, I'm still personally recovering from some of the stuff that I was raised with. But there are some observations we can make just from some of these particular things that I'm mentioning this morning that I think have had an effect on the Christianity that I know. First is the dangers of sexual repression. Repression meaning like just this sense of outlawing sex and sexuality. Thinking that by restricting it, building laws around it, that you can somehow hold people into some kind of way. It's like repression of any form. Let's be honest. If I told my kids, look, you can't go into that room. Any room in this house, don't go into that room. They will jimmy that lock. They will take the hinges off that door. They will find a way in. Don't touch that burner on that stove. Look at, you can eat anything in the fridge, but there is one thing that I... guys, you can have anything, but don't touch my booze in my closet here. Something weird goes on when people start outlawing and saying, absolutely you can't, or, and especially in the church's case, God is going to be pissed. Something weird happens. And I tell you, you don't have to look any further than the Catholic Church right now. And I'm not beating up on the Catholics. Protestants have no better record, but I'm telling you, what we're watching in the news is horrific. What happens when there's laws that restrict people from just even expressing their own natural human sexuality? Crazy. Things get strange. Am I okay in saying that? The story of Adam and Eve is so symbolic of it. It's like you can eat anything in this garden. Just stay away from that tree. Don't eat that fruit. Sexual repression of any sort. Parents, pay attention. Pay attention. You want to use fear. You want to use shame. You want to use guilt. Let me just, things start going sideways there in a hurry. That is one option. The other observation is just around shame. The sexual shame that has been propagated, that today I'm watching play out, not just internally. Kathy and I have worked through in our own marriage, but in the lives of so many people with regard to their sexuality is scary. It's epidemic. I think I've shared this story one time. Kathy and I were down in Phoenix. We were going to church, my mom's church down there, pretty, you know, Bible belty. She comes out, Kathy's wearing this summy dress. It was warm, it's hot. I mean, in the desert. So she, you know, spaghetti straps, whatever. And my mom says to her, you're not wearing that, are you? And Kathy's like, maybe. Kathy comes back in the room. I'm getting ready. And she's going, I guess I'm not wearing this. And I go, why not? Of course you are. She goes, no, your mom told me to like either cover it up or don't wear it. The subtleties of this stuff. Now, maybe no one is outlawing this, but how many sit here and are constantly, women especially, are thinking through, what am I projecting? Because I don't want people to think the wrong thing. I don't want to be guilty of. The shame and guilt around sexual expression is so crazy right now. I haven't spoken about some of the major cultural pushbacks, the blowbacks that we've watched in our culture over the last 30, 40, 50 years. When you talk about the sexual revolution of the 60s, the women's movement that went coinciding along with that, you saw people on as a whole looking at the crazy repression and the shame associated, especially toward females and their sexuality, and them going, whoa, 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 this is screwed up. There's something wrong with this. People saying, I do not have to be embarrassed or ashamed of my sexuality. I don't have to be. And the church seemingly to double down in those times, in those eras, using, again, broken theology to try to pin people in, hem them in, repress them, or shame them and guilt them into keeping quiet about whatever it is they're doing behind closed doors. The shame that exists as we begin to talk with people about their own lives, some that have made pledges, some, I mean, as a pastor who has been marrying people for the last 24 years, 25 years, I've watched as couples come in wanting to get married. We do this premarital counseling. One part of it, you have them do this 165 questionnaire. Part of it was about their sexual lives. They're asking them, so you actively in sex, blah, 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 blah. I mean, they're generic questions. They were lying. For the first 12 years, I'm looking at this. I'm going, come on, come on. And they both smile. I'm going, it's a questionnaire. It's no good if you'd lie on it. And they're going, well, we didn't want to. Our parents still think that we've never had sex. We can't. Broken. So many people believing if I just hold myself until marriage, then it's going to be beautiful. And then they get married and there's so much dysfunction and brokenness even within the marriage. And they're going, what the hell have I done? What's the matter with us? Now, I won't even go into, speaking of the LGBTQ community and the guilt, the shame, the repression that has been forced onto them, where they have to seriously even deny who they are. We could write volumes and volumes. You could write volumes and volumes and volumes on the insanity that has been propagated within the church. We're just at this point where we just need to go, wait a second, where did this all come from? Our early church fathers are castrating themselves. They're believing that sexual intercourse is evil. They should wipe out mankind before anyone has sex. And that stuff keeps filtering and filtering and filtering to the point where we just see this subtle body language from our parents, from leaders, from people around us, and we pick it up and we don't know where it even came from. But we assume the party line and stuff goes on. Now just, let me just pull this to a close. I think there are people here, if you're like me, that in one way or another, your sexual life is being affected right now by stuff that's happened way back for no good reason. I think there are people in this room right now, I would bet a lot of money if I was allowed. There are people struggling right now with all kinds of addictions. But and the addictions have come out of natural urges or whatever, and it just led into some brokenness, no different than alcohol, no different than drugs, no different than anything else. But you're hiding in the secrecy and the shame of it because there's so much shame around this area. And you're locked in with this. I think there's people right now in our, it would be in this community, listening to this podcast right now, that are having trouble in their own marriage. Sex. Sex is not good. It's bad. It's not working. One person is frustrated and you'd like it, but you, I don't dare talk about this or whatever. It just feels weird. What would she think? Or he? But you don't know who to ask, and you don't want to come out with it. So you just stay there, locked in. Why? Because there's some kind of shame around that thing. I'm telling you, within this community, there are kids over in the social hall right now, teens, kids downstairs, that right now, their messaging that they have heard or not heard is that this is a deep, dark secret. And they're going to follow in our footsteps if we're not careful. This week, I want you to do some inventory. How you feel around anything I've talked about, any kind of area of sexuality in your life. How do you feel about your own body? Talking about sex. Can you talk openly about it? Can you talk about it with your kids? Just think about why, if you can't. What is behind that? Next week, Vince is coming in to talk about pleasure, the whole area of pleasure. I'm telling you, you're in for a treat. It's going to be, it's good stuff. We talked about sex a number of years ago. I'm telling you, I had people leave. I had people walk out. Like, this was like, thankfully, we're in a, no one's left here today. This is great. And you can even smile and maybe you're waiting to tell me. Okay. A new day is dawning. And we need to break this. We need to break this cycle. Enter into a new healthy spirituality and sexuality. So hope you'll join us next week. I want to pray for you. I want to pray for your awareness because some of you are going, yeah, no, I don't have a right. Now, there are some of you that you're going, no, I'm good. I am good. And let me tell you, I celebrate that. But I want to pray for those of you right now who may be even being affected and you don't even realize it. God, you're helping me. You're pointing out the areas that something's broken. And I'm thankful for that. And I just pray that your spirit will speak and show and create awareness. And that God, maybe for the first time, there's new conversations with spouses, partners, parents, kids. Break it open, God, and help us reclaim something that is so beautiful. Amen.